everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Voice of Support. We are sitting here in GSA Media Studios with Nabil Pike, who is the lead program manager for Zoom Supportability. And I got to tell you, this is a really cool product. It's been about 5 months now since it's been on the shelves, I believe.
Yep, we launched in November.
Cool. So in that short 5 months, what's it been like?
It's been a roller coaster ride, an amazing product to work on. I've been at Microsoft about 7.5 years or so in different roles, and this has to be one of the most fun times that I've had since I joined. We started with the team back in about May of last year. So we were around in the fairly early stages of the product development as we were really figuring out what was going to come to market, what some of the longer term strategies and stuff around it was going to be. And it felt a lot like working in the small companies and some of the startup experiences that I had before I joined Microsoft. Just amazing amount of energy. I've never been this locked in with a product team since I've been at Microsoft, I'd say.
That's really cool. So it definitely sounds like it's a relatively small team, both on the program management side, or the product group side, I should say, and also support as well. Or
yeah, I'd say we on support we always try to be pretty efficient and run pretty lean, but we want to do a great job for our customers. So we've been working on the support model and strategy for. How will we support, what are the boundaries, getting content in place, almost as long as we've been developing the product for this. So our year one launch for a product entering into the market with so many unknowns and new things going with it was pretty challenging from the standpoint of just trying to get everything right and account for all the things that you know that you will not account for.
Well, it sounds like just being in that kind of startup environment, I think, is probably a plus from a support standpoint because the customer probably feels that intimacy, I guess, that you might get with a smaller team supporting a product versus, you know, the monolith, if it was an office product or something like that. So you're probably getting that startup kind of feel. It looks like it with the support site and Zoom.net and all of the information out there.
Oh, yeah, I mean, the look and feel of all things Zoom is, it has sort of a culture to it that isn't really quite the same as Microsoft. There's definitely some similarities, but I mean, working in a product space which is so focused on music and entertainment, it's pretty cool for anybody that sort of has a passion for music and connected entertainment and whatnot. I can't imagine a better place to be in Microsoft.
And the collaboration aspect of the device itself, it just kind of lends itself to the collaborative piece of the internet that we've got going for
the whole social piece.
Yeah,
the capabilities of the device and what we released year one was a lot of fun. The idea of wireless sharing, I think, is still in its infancy for us, but it's just something that nobody else is really doing and doing well at this point. So being able to see the product sort of take shape and the Zoom player in its many forms until we released it to market was really cool. It's sort of this balancing act that you play with supportability of understanding what's out there and what's coming next and preparing for that, but also being responsive and being aware of what are the problems or questions that customers are having with the product today. How can we fix those and how can we improve what's out there so there's more instructions in the product, there's more ability for people to understand and enjoy it as painlessly as possible, really. I'd say that's kind of a principle for the Zoom support team.
Yeah. Diverging a little bit, or whatever. Start again. Getting off the subject a bit and going back to your history at Microsoft, because I think it's kind of important for people that listen to the podcast to understand what brought you to Zoom.
Oh, definitely.
And, you know, your history maybe at Microsoft and what prior to Microsoft, which kind of played to you getting into Zoom and having that role that you've got now.
Well, like most people, I went to college and got a degree, which I probably did nothing with. I was an English major, and virtually every job that I got out of college after that was progressively more technical, because I was kind of a computer hobbyist ever since I was a kid. And eventually I got a call from an old boss of mine that ended up at Microsoft, asking if I was interested in going through an interview loop, or at least getting my name put in the pool. So after some time, I mean, I was having a great time. I was in my mid-20s and had enough to sort of keep body and soul together, and was living with some of my best friends in the world. So making a change to come work for a company like Microsoft, I'd never even really considered that I might be working for. I mean, Microsoft was this company that made stuff that I used. I really didn't think there was anybody behind it other than sort of a name. So it took about a week or two of thinking about it, and I decided that I would go ahead and submit my resume, and surprised the hell out of me when I got into an interview loop and really kind of gelled with the people in the interview loop and got a job offer to come work at Microsoft. So that, at the time, it meant pulling up stakes from Portland, Oregon. Mm-hmm. I was a Northwest kid, and moving down to Dallas, Texas, where I stayed for my first year at Microsoft. So that was a change in and of itself, if not just from a climate thing.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
For sure.
So have you been in support that entire time?
Yeah, in one form or another. Support's a pretty broad and varied organization. I've done everything from managing frontline support and customer service agents that take phone calls when customers call in, to also doing some of the user research side stuff, which was a lot of fun and a really enlightening experience. It's the team that does our support online site for Microsoft, and I was responsible for effectively understanding how our users interact with Microsoft products, what do they do when they break, and how can we improve their experience both in the product and, more importantly, at our support.microsoft.com site. So that lasted about 3 years or so, and probably one of the most informative jobs that I've ever had at Microsoft in terms of understanding the mind of our actual users. Everybody kind of assumes that they understand, and in the process of developing products, a lot of times we make educated guesses about the customer experience. So getting out in the field and actually seeing what happens when a customer has their OS throw an error message at them, what happens when they need to know how to format a Word table and can't find it, that was probably one of the best things that I could have done to really further my understanding of the customer experience, I'd say. And that informed a lot of the other jobs that I took after that and what I wanted to do. I think that's probably what led me from moving from the support online site into the supportability role that I did. And I knew that the E&D support organization, which is this organization at Microsoft that supports a number of different product lines, they include Xbox. I'm a gamer as well as a PC guy. So I've always been into entertainment, music, computers and media, and so it was a fairly logical fit for me that if I could actually get a job where I was working with that and getting paid for it, that that seemed about the best thing in the world. So after,
what did you do to get the karma to get you into this role? It's like it was like a natural path, you know, come in and work at support, work with support reps, now you're working on a new product, you're bringing innovative ideas to supporting that product. It's like great path for you.
Oh, you know, I think a lot of it's a blind luck. Sean Huberty, I did an informational with him about 2 years ago or so, and just talking about his organization, what his teams did and what it was like. And I think I got a kind of a good indication from him and from talking with some other people in his team of some of the different roles. And supportability really felt like a natural fit for me. It's this combination of understanding the customer experience, but getting to basically be pretty deep on the technology itself and work pretty closely with the people that are developing the next version and working on improving the current versions. So I think that's where it was a very, very logical progression for me. And I knew at that point that supportability was the role that I wanted to get into. And luckily an opportunity came up where Sean kind of knew my name and my interest and was impressed enough with the initial conversations that we had that I heard through the grapevine that there was an opportunity coming up, and immediately submitted my resume for it through the interview loop. And after a pretty rigorous interview loop, got a job offer to come work on a related team in his organization for actually IPTV. So it's the stuff we're working a lot with AT&T on, mm-hmm. and was the sole supportability program manager for them, which is where I learned a lot about product group engagements mm-hmm. and how the internal functioning of building the products that eventually come into the customer's hands really works. And then after we did some reorgs there was another opportunity with this brand new product. I actually didn't even know what product I was supporting when I went through the interview loop, funny enough. We hadn't branded it yet, so yeah. It was just this new thing that was sort mm-hmm. of cloaked in secrecy.
Well, it sounds like from a supportability standpoint, what I'm curious about, and as you're talking about your experience with the user assistance or user experience group, how does Zoom support, based on the experience you had, I'm assuming that you implemented maybe some different types of things from a support standpoint.
Definitely.
The customer experience side of things.
I think understanding what happens with customers when our products either aren't intuitive enough for them or give them error messages, some of which are less than comprehensible, was a great tool to sort of walk in the door with, especially with a V1 product. And really early on, I looked for and was very surprised by the level of design and usability. Usability is the sort of discipline which is designed to help understand how effectively, like an interface or program or device of any kind, works for people, how well they can use it. And this was sort of a principle that was being touted and actually sort of internalized on the product group side for the Zoom team. They really, really took it seriously. You've seen a lot of things over the years at Microsoft, some good, some bad. And this sort of attention to detail that they had of really wanting to get it right and think of it not as disconnected interfaces, but this sort of end-to-end experience or scenarios of use really helped me understand that I made the right choice in taking on support for Zoom. It's one of those product teams that gets it.
So were you guys engaged pretty early on then with a lot of that usability work that the product team was doing?
Yeah, we had the opportunity to attend a lot of the usability sessions that were done in sort of earlier formative usability, which is really cool. You get to see how customers interact with the device, with the software, with different pieces of it. And, I mean, that's invaluable. It really gives you a heads up on what you think might go wrong or what you might need to document for users mm-hmm. on post-release. You find out how the product breaks for them or where they have questions about it.
So at what point in the process did you start documenting support type of things? Since it was such a short, concept to release.
Well, a lot of that's gated on when everything sort of firms up enough for you to document. Mm-hmm. The cool thing about Zoom is the amount of activity and the amount of work that the product team is able to do in a really short period of time. So going from sort of initial idea and releasing in November, all in a pretty short time frame, meant that a lot of the stuff was fairly fluid until a lot closer to the release. So summer was really our big push where we pretty much knew most of what the UI was going to be stabilized on, both for the software and the hardware. And that's where my team really kicked in and started doing a planning process to figure out, okay, what information needs to be out there, both for the support agents and for the customers. And the majority of the information that we have available to our support agents, we actually make available to the public as well through the support knowledge base. So we call them KB articles. And we worked for about 2.5 months pretty much continuously on agent training and knowledge base articles to prepare for our holiday launch last year.
So you guys cover the entire Zune experience, the hardware, the software, the whole bit, right?
Yeah, we definitely think of Zune as sort of a unified experience. It's not really one thing. It's the sum of everything that comes together. It's the Zune device. It's the Zune software piece that the device connects to and you manage your library through. It's the Zune marketplace where you can use like your Zune subscription pass or download music. Everything has to work together for customers. If any one piece of it breaks, the experience breaks for the customer. So that's really the way that we thought about it as the support team as well, which was pretty cool because as opposed to thinking about it as, hey, we're supporting a device and it's going to connect into an application, but we don't support that. That's not really our job. We got to sort of feel this great sense of ownership of the customer's experience of Zune. The product team's pretty active. We're a growing area for Microsoft, and this is definitely something that we're in for the long haul. I think it's been stated pretty resoundingly in the media that Microsoft looks at Zune as a multiple-year strategy and investment for us, so I think everything's only going to get better. Yeah, you'll see new services, you'll see new hardware, you'll see new ideas come out of the Zune team. Can't really talk about time frame yet, but you know, the upcoming announcements I think will be surprising to everybody. I think we'll keep people pretty excited about what's going on and just some of the new ideas that we're bringing to the music and entertainment experience.
How much of a part are the customers playing in that? And in the sense that it is a community-driven kind of concept. So I'm assuming that there's a lot of dialogue on the internet in various places about the device and about the experience. And I'm just wondering from a new product standpoint, new feature standpoint, how much of that is, would you say it's a pretty collaborative thing and you're looking at that? And I'm just wondering how much of...
If what I'm hearing you correctly, is how much are what customers are saying, what customers are asking for, how we really bring in that back in both on the support
right,
side and the product team side.
And you know, customers have great ideas.
So. Oh, definitely. One of the biggest surprises that I think occurs for somebody outside of Microsoft and coming into Microsoft is the fact that we actually have really smart people working here. And so a lot of the ideas that come from the outside really resonate or repeat the ideas that are already sort of in the minds of everyone with the product team. So with Microsoft, the version that's out there now, we may already be thinking 2 to 3 years ahead into the next version or the next iteration or sort of the evolution of different parts of it. So I think the product team pays a lot of attention to what the needs of customers are for Zune. What do they want it to do? What's really lacking in their experiences now? And how can we sort of realize that for customers? So on the support side, we're very responsive in terms of saying what's breaking, what's not working for
right.
customers today, and how can we fix that? Some of that time it's training an agent, some of the time it's creating a knowledge base article or content that helps customers fix their own problems, advocating or getting links to error messages in the product mm-hmm. and getting a link in there so it actually takes you to the solution instead of just sort of providing you an error message of what's wrong. But at the end of the day, customers care a lot about sort of the features and what's new. And that's something that I think the product team is delivering on pretty well. Without sort of giving away any secrets, I think there's some great surprises for the next versions.
Well, that question is spurned from all my friends that give me suggestions now. Oh, you're working for Zuno. Tell them I want this.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I'll do that. I'll jot that right down.
Well, and I think that startup mentality is still there for the product team as well. The feedback links on Zune.net are something that the product teams both marketing and development side take pretty seriously in terms of new suggestions or how are we doing. So,
do you find that the information that you get for Zune, having experience in other organizations from a support perspective, that type of feedback is more actionable and richer than, say, because of the new experience, because of the startup type of environment?
I think from a product cycle perspective, we have a lot of online areas to our product, which sort of speeds up how fast you can make changes or roll out new experiences. We've had the 1.2 update that came out in December for Zune and had a bunch of improvements. And the great thing about the Zune product team is the majority of the things that we're fixing, vast majority, in any update, are all driven by what's actually breaking for customers or customer feedback, direct from incoming support calls, from forums and news groups, and really trying to alleviate customer pain is probably the single biggest principle. A lot of stuff that happens is behind the scenes on internal applications, stuff that the customer may never see. They just notice that the app feels faster, it feels more fluid, it feels more stable for them. But I've definitely seen that in the philosophy around the last updates and the upcoming update that, like, Caesar talks about on ZuneInsider.com. Same thing. I really think that the product team is looking to really try to make as ideal of an experience as possible for customers. So every time they're looking at what's going out in the next fix, the first question is always, okay, well, what does support have to say? What are the issues the customer is experiencing? What can we fix?
That's great.
Yeah, you pretty much covered all my community-based questions. So yeah.
It's when he starts talking, and that's when the,
yep.
the questions come into my mind.
Yeah.
Should we mention that the we can cut this out. That we did invite more than just Nabil to this conversation, and his team pretty much left him SOL.
Yeah, I've got a great team of supportability program managers that I manage. We're pretty tight. There's the four of us that cover the various areas of the Zune experience, from hardware to software to live services and everything else. So they decided that I'd be the best representative for the team today. So I'll have to think of a way to thank them for that.
Well, it was great to be here. Yeah. I haven't been here in a while, so it's good.
It's good. Good to be back.
Yeah. And good talking to you, Nabil.
Thanks. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thanks for coming out. And looking forward to the future of Zune. It's going to be very, very interesting stuff coming up, for sure. So until next time, thanks for tuning in.
Thanks, guys.